Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rich Hudson.
Hello.
And Ash Millman.
Hello.
Now, I want to talk to you guys about Bethesda, because I think, as my opening gambit to this thing, that they've had a pretty terrible generation. I think they've had the worst performance of any sort of developer-publisher combo this gen.
Ooh.
What do you think about that, Ash Millman?
Oh, I like Bethesda. I've always been
a big Bethesda
fan, but you're not wrong.
Rich,
I agree.
Yeah?
On average, they've had a pretty naff generation.
Stinky time.
They've not plummeted as far down as some publishers have been, but on a consistency level, their consistency is good, but the actual consistency of their quality is a bit all over.
Yes, oh yes, they've definitely churned out, or they've released a handful of games on the developer side where they've had a hand in them, and they've obviously stepped way more into becoming a publisher this generation. They have a regular stage at E3 and stuff like that, so they're showing off these other games. But I would argue that they've stumbled every step of the way. So I've kind of highlighted a few different things, some different news stories, some things that they try to do, and we'll just sort of talk them out. I want to open, though, with that sort of general perception of Bethesda, because they've been relying on very similar game engines, Gamebryo and now Creation is what they've been using for the last few years. And they have that reputation of just being full of junk. And it's that thing where even back in, you know, Morrowind and Oblivion and Skyrim, we kind of just went, oh, Bethesda.
Yeah.
Oh, it's one of those things. But I think that sort of tipped over this gen instead of just being like, actually,
the self-awareness about it doesn't justify the fact that your engine needs to be improved.
Yeah, absolutely. Where do you guys stand on just that, on that idea that it's kind of their personality, but it's not really good anymore?
I mean, for me personally, I guess it didn't really bother me for years and years. I was just absolutely fine with it, and I didn't really like suffer that much from the glitches myself, so it wasn't that big of a deal.
Get hit by a giant in Skyrim.
Yeah, no, I was even if it was there, it was livable again. Like, I didn't really mind. Like, I was very forgiving with them, and even now I still feel like I'd give them a lot more time of day than other people would. But it was when, like, I've said loads of times, I'm not the biggest Fallout fan, but playing Fallout 76 for the channel and stuff and having a little play of that, I was like, oh boy.
Playing.
Oh boy.
Inverted
yeah,
things.
The beta. I was like, this is not so good. So that kind of like skewed it for me into seeing that there is a big issue and it's not cute and it's not funny. And it's like, if you're going to be offering out these games and be this big behemoth of a giant in the industry, then sort your crap out a bit.
A little bit, what do you think?
They have got some of the best IPs in gaming under their hood. They've got Doom, they've got Wolfenstein, Fallout, Elder Scrolls, they've got things like Dishonored and Prey, they've got Evil Within, they've got loads of really, there's genuinely, I don't think they've published a game that is like of a bad franchise. Everything has got some kind of heft to it that other developers and publishers must look at and think, God, I wish that was ours.
Right.
But yeah, they have this approach of the old school games that are really janky. And when we hit, for example, I would say like with the turnover into the 8th gen is when games got more refined, and the fact that like you could get games that were perfect.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfect. And they were still like, oh, this is just what we do.
Yeah.
That was like, this isn't the Xbox 360 anymore. We want games that are going to be pristine, and you guys aren't doing that. And the self-awareness, as I've said, doesn't like make it okay that you're sticking to old tech.
They have like the whole thing with like their acronym for beta was like break it early, test application. It's like, we're getting all self-aware with how kind of half-baked our games are. I think one of the tipping points was with The Witcher 3, because for the longest time with Bethesda, it was like, oh, no one else can do this. No one else can make worlds.
Bethesda are the
big
RPG people.
And it was like, I mean, it's true that like the general structure of The Witcher is different to like a Bethesda RPG. There's all these interlocking parts in a Bethesda RPG. RPG that are way more streamlined than The Witcher, but the sheer size of that game and the, I mean, The Witcher went through a handful of patches at launch, but like overall, The Witcher is a tighter experience you know, a tighter game engine.
Completely different, wasn't it? Because that came out. I remember that being like, oh my God, I can love
someone
something.
Someone else can do this.
Yeah, I can love something as much as I love The Elder Scrolls when Witcher 3 came out. Because I played Witcher 2, but that one was the one that like, I was like, gee whiz
on this
Jiminy crickets
on this PC YouTube appropriate podcast where we can't say sweary things. But yeah, I mean, that like that sort of signature element, I just even like, because we'll get into the games that they've developed and stuff later, but when was the last time you were wowed by a Bethesda game? Because for me it was Skyrim, and that was way back in 2011.
For me it was Fallout 4.
Okay.
Because I stand on the podium of I like Fallout 4. I don't think it's a bad game.
What's the opposite of a podium? I'm like down in like a mole hill.
A mole hill still upwards.
I'm just looking up here.
You're in a well.
I'm in a well of hatred.
That's so apt for you, isn't it? In a well.
I want to live in a well.
No, I think Fallout 4 was the first time that I really got... It was the first time I really properly got into an RPG-style game, because I've never been an RPG person. Mm. And then Fallout 4, I think it was because of the engine and the shooting that got me back into it. Because I tried New Vegas back in the day, and the shooting in it is arse. So
yeah, hasn't it?
That didn't bode well with me, hence why even now going back to it and trying it again, I'm like, this is just, it just doesn't play as well as I'd like it to. So Fallout 4 was the first time it really wowed me, as well as Wolfenstein The New Order, which again is not an original
They
brought it back. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was the point for me. So I've stuck with Bethesda ever since. I haven't played everything they've done.
Right.
But when it comes to Fallout, Wolfenstein, stuff like that, Doom, anything id-wise, that's where I am.
Because for me, like Fallout 4, like I love that they brought in id Software to do the shooting, and I think that Fallout 4, like it's the best playing Fallout by a long shot. But I think if you didn't play that much of 3 or New Vegas, did you play Fallout 3?
No, actually. I want to get Fallout 3, but because I play it on PC, the PC version is balls.
Right, okay.
it's completely rubbish.
My thing with like Bethesda is that they always had this one thing they did immaculately well, and they've kind of just iterated on it. So like, I think if you came to Fallout 4, if that was your first Fallout, you'd be like, holy crap, this is amazing. Whereas like I had that with 3 in New Vegas. But Ash, what was the last time you loved Bethesda?
It's always Skyrim. It's always Elder Scrolls is where I'm at. Like Prey was Bethesda as well.
Prey
wasn't it?
Well, they published it.
The original Prey.
The new one
was Bethesda.
Yeah, new was like 2016.
Yeah, because I gave that a little whirl, and it didn't blow me away, but I thought it was a cool game because it was very like Bioshock-y.
Yeah.
Like it was nice, but Skyrim is the time where like, that is the game that just makes me cry every time I put it in. Like, I was like,
ugh. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the thing, like they're talking about their game engine and stuff, and we can kind of segue into the idea of mods, because I think they have a weird relationship with their fan base, or the acknowledgement that their games are very mod happy. Mm. And like in 2015 they tried to do the whole paid mods thing, and then that just got so roundly shat upon that like everyone hated the idea that this thing that was formerly free, they were now trying to introduce a paid element to it.
Yeah.
Which, even if you give them the benefit of the doubt, the idea that you can take their assets, you can mod stuff and create levels and characters and whatever, and then you get some money back from that too, like that's in theory a cool idea.
On a standpoint of being the producer of these mods, then I can get that.
Yeah.
But yeah, on a consumer side, it just was not okay.
Because I think it was like the base principle of like you're trying to charge for mods that people just want to make and distribute for free. So that, like I said, that was like roundly hated back in 2015. They then went, okay, God, sorry, and then gave it like 2 years, and then they brought it back in 2017 and called it the Creation Club, which like if you make stuff for the Creation Club, you only get paid at, they call it specific developer milestones. Thing that you're signing over if you make something is you're giving them the rights to use that piece of content anywhere they want going forward ever, which... It's a weird issue.
It literally just seems like them being like, come on, fix that game for us.
That's what I'm getting to. That's what I can't escape. Like, what do you think of that? Because I think they fall back on that so much.
Oh, no, 100%. I think sticking to this engine and going forward with this engine as well, when they've said it's going to be in the space game. Starfield, jeez. Yeah, that absolutely left my memory then, sorry. But Starfield and the Elder Scrolls 6 and everything, saying that's still going to be a creation engine is very much like...
The worst thing you could say.
Don't you?
Yeah, and it's just like that thing too, like Todd Howard's like, oh yeah, we're going to keep going because the modders love it. And it's like, well, the consumers don't. Yeah. Like, why are you building something for the mods?
I'm somebody that's never modded games.
No,
I've never been somebody that's keen to mod it, even playing on PC. It's like, I've never interested me. I'd rather just play the vanilla experience. Mm-hmm. It's like, like saying about Fallout 3, the Steam version of Fallout 3 is the old Games for Windows Live, Windows 7 version that you used to play on Windows. Yeah. It says on the Steam page, you have to play this on Windows 7 or else it doesn't work. It's like, people said, you can just get a mod for it and get it fixed. It's like, but I don't want to do that.
shouldn't have to.
I'm too lazy. I just want to download it and play it. And apparently the GOG one I can play, so I will get around to playing Fallout 3 eventually.
Good.
But the thing about the engine stuff is, as an example, I always seem to go to, Call of Duty's been running on the same engine forever.
Right, yeah.
But they keep building on it every single time, which admittedly they do with... the creation engine, because I mean Skyrim had little bits of building stuff
that then glitched out.
Yeah, which they then refined and put into Fallout 4. So it's like, yes, they can keep building on it, but I think we're waiting on them to turn around and go, we have now made a whole new engine, almost like we've replaced 75% of the old engine. This is the creation engine version 2.
I think
outright V2. This is something completely new. We're going to go from here.
That's what I'm waiting for them to do. I think it's that distinction between like that core Bethesda feel, which you get because they've had that engine for so long. And even Gamebryo to creation wasn't a massive leap in terms of that core feel.
Yeah.
But it's just, like you said, all the bugs and glitches and stuff just not sitting together. And that feel has become that you just expect broken stuff.
I mean, if they know that it's broken, that it's glitching, that there's bugs and that modders are having to fix it, just do a new one. Like it's cute and everything, and they want to stick to this. But it needs to be tight from the get go. It needs to be an absolutely rounded, perfect, immaculate machine that people can then add to, rather than just a mess that people try and clean up each time. Like that's
I
what
wonder
it feels
as
like.
Well how much because they obviously they came up as like this like PC studio and like obviously their original RPGs were these massive expansive games on PC, and as they've moved into the console space, those expectations have kind of changed. Like you play a lot more PC than we do. Do you tend to put up with? I don't know. Like, is there more of that idea that you'll put up with stuff, or you'll be more open to mods? Because on console, it's like we're expecting one final product, and that's it.
I think the idea that they try to bring mods to consoles, I think, is a really interesting idea because it is going at it at a PC standpoint, it seems really confusing as to how it would really work in the grand scheme of things, and obviously doing everything in engine inside the game itself is how they would go about it. But yeah, I don't know, it's I've completely lost my train of thought.
My whole thing is that they had these old school RPGs that were like these really big, expansive ideas and innovative. Like nothing had been done on that scale before. But in experimenting and trying to like ostensibly like create the genre do whatever they could towards that genre, you were more forgiving with like, oh well, it's absolutely like something like Daggerfall is so huge that you might be more okay with like potential issues as they get there.
PC is very much like a proving ground. It's where random stuff goes and happens. It's why the PC ecosystem is so vast and there's so much you can get because they could just do anything they wanted. Whereas, as you said, on a console, I see what you mean by the question now. My mind just went, hey, let's
No, but you were right. It's just
but like, yeah, with a console, you expect it to be there and then because they, I mean, obviously back then, especially when they first brought Morrowind to the Xbox, the original one, day one patches and stuff weren't really a thing. Xbox Live did exist then.
It was not in any way near what it is today.
Obviously, not now, but I don't know whether it was actually running at that point when Morrowind came out. Probably not. But like they wanted that. They needed that full title there and then. But the beauty of the Xbox is, because obviously Morrowind never came to the PS2, because the Xbox is basically just a PC.
Yeah, they always said it was easier to code for.
Oh, it's a damn sight easier to code for.
But that thing of like PC being a proving ground, like does that mean that they've kind of misread the terrain, like in terms of what people expect from consoles? Because nearly all of these issues, we'll get into the review policy in a bit, but like all those things kind of stem from the expectations on the console side. Potentially.
I think it's interesting that there's a place that games can go to be proved
like
rather than just... But I think if we look at, Skyrim Remastered.
It's pretty good.
That came with a load of mods for the Xbox, didn't it? Yep. So that was the game, and then all of the fun PC stuff that we missed out on that they brought over.
Yeah. And I think that's a great idea. Again, that swings back to the monetization aspect of it. It's like, nah, I shouldn't have done that. The idea of having that as a console player, like I said, I'm not a modder myself. I don't enjoy modding stuff as much as I would love to have Thomas the Tank Engine fly about instead of a dragon. Having that open to people who wouldn't have that opportunity otherwise because they don't play on PC is a great idea.
It was cool. It was cool to mess around with. Like, I made everyone look weird and change the grass blue and stuff and put things in the sky.
Cheese
and
then, wheels.
Yeah, and there's whole new quests and stuff, which I thought was really interesting because it's basically free DLC.
Yeah. It's like the DLC you can get for things like Fallout where you get different openings. Like, there's one for Fallout 4 where you end up washed up on a beach and you start from the start rather than starting in the vault.
Oh, God, I always did that at the vampire hole in...
The Skyrim one's brilliant. Like, you can start as like a bartender or whatever and live like a whole different life.
Yeah.
That's a good way to sort of like, I mean, that's where they're modding, that whole idea of the Creation Club and like we're one big community and we're expanding on everything together. Like, that's the best side of that stuff. Mm. Whether like the Shimmering Isles DLC is like this massive, it could feel like an official DLC. But it's just that core product. Sometimes I look at the mod stuff. There's that whole, is it Fallout Miami? The really expansive like Fallout spin-off that a whole bunch of fans made.
Yeah, people are also recreating Fallout New Vegas in the Fallout 4 engine as well.
Yeah.
And things like that.
But those kind of things just point to like that idea of the core foundation. Like Bethesda aren't the ones like, you know, flying the flag. It's the modders kind of kicking out these more polished experiences.
It's interesting to think because like, it just is a weird comparison to PC. It feels like Bethesda were releasing these games like they're Garry's Mod games, where it's like, here's all the tools.
Here's some tools,
go.
Yeah.
And it's like, but no, that's not what people want. Yeah. They want a half-hour game and then a building part of it and then go, okay, here's two halves, go. That's the whole game.
Yeah.
The whole thing is that you want the core experience, like you say, you want a wonderful game, you want a tight, established, great game you can play through and really enjoy, and then maybe some stupid stuff on the side if people want to add it, like Thomas Tank Engine in the Sky. Like that's a fun little thing to just throw in, but it isn't necessary to the gameplay, whereas lots of the mods were actually quite necessary to making the game work, and that's where the line needs to be drawn.
Yeah, I think they've gone into like a weird sort of like do-it-yourself, like that DIY Garry's Mod approach, where like in Skyrim's like for the DLC, you had the Hearthfire stuff where you start building your own homestead, and then in Fallout 4 you had the settlement stuff, and I'm just, for me watching that, I was like, well, who's this for? Like, who is this weird kind of half Minecraft mentality? Stop buying this stuff, Rich.
I loved it. I loved
did
the settlement.
You? I did. See, that kind of proves the point that we're making, though, because like, I mean, where do you sit on this, Ash, as the in-between?
As settlements.
The whole idea of like all those sort of DIY pieces of content where they give you the tools, they give you the pieces, and you build it yourself.
I thought making a house was cute.
Oh, stop it.
I think it was more, I can kind of see why you're bringing that into the conversation, but I don't think that was put there as a means of saying, okay, we can't be asked to make this, you do it
instead. No.
It's more the idea of it's your place, it's your part of that world, and that's why I bought into Fallout 4 so well, because I had the castle and I built it up and it was like, nothing is getting in here.
Yes.
Like, this place is awesome now.
I'm talking more about... like, you know, them sort of exploring that mentality of like, we'll give you the tools to have fun, like, which is like, that's at the core of something
like
Minecraft.
Should we just make a builder and then you go from there?
Opposed to like, you know, Skyrim before Hearthfire was like, this is the Skyrim experience. You can go in these directions and find these things and we've orchestrated them for you.
I liked having the choice about my own house, but I did also like that Skyrim in essence was, you don't you just go and find your own house in each one? There's like one house for sale that you can just buy, and that was before all the Hearthfire stuff.
Yeah, but you have all the main quest stuff too and everything. It's
just houses, but like, I mean, you can just do that on the side, and then they're kind of expanded upon it because people wanted a bit more from it. So I feel like that maybe is a bit different to the mod stuff because it was their like official expansion on what we already had a bit of in the game.
True. I think, for me, those things somewhat go hand in hand in terms of what they were experimenting with. That idea, that mentality of like, you know, here's the tools, have fun.
Yeah.
For me, like those things feel similar, but I totally know what you guys mean as well.
Yeah.
I want to move into their review policy change, because this was massive back in 2016, where they came out after, basically they proved, quote unquote, as they would say, that they don't need to supply review copies to outlets beforehand. And they proved this, quote unquote, again, with Doom, which sold extremely well and reviewed extremely well, but they didn't give anybody review copies before launch.
Mm-hmm.
So their test case was Doom. And then after that, for Dishonored 2 and going forward, they announced that in October that no review copies for their games would be given ahead of time because they don't really see the need. And they said that they want to make sure that the reviews focus on the gameplay and everyone has the same experience, the reviewers and the consumers and everything else.
They should be. That's the thing. You should be. Why would it be changing after a reviewer has got it? It wouldn't be the same experience.
The cynical side, which I'll just go down, is that they don't want people knowing about the junk, about the half-baked stuff, about any potential reason why you wouldn't buy day one.
Because unless they're like, oh yeah, by the way, if you're getting a copy a week earlier, then the game that's going to be releasing a week later is going to be something different. Mm-hmm. It's like, well then, you know, how have you managed to change it in a week?
Yeah, there's also the fact that even though they said like no one's going to be reviewing our games early, they then still supply various YouTube channels with the copies. It tends to be
because they still have to. It would be like not suicide, but like it would be silly not to.
That's the thing. Because
that he's living in as well.
That's the thing. Like I said, they supply a handful of YouTube channels, and they tend to be the ones that cover Bethesda stuff anyway. The ones where they could semi-guarantee from a PR standpoint that they're going to get good coverage of that game.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, it would would be suicide to not put those games out ahead of time so that people can know what they are. Hence the fact that every single game since they announced this review policy has underperformed in terms of all the ones that they're publishing. I just looked all this stuff up now, and it's like, you know, since they put the policy in place at the end of 2016, the next game was Dishonored 2, which was sold 40% lower than its original game. Prey, they didn't actually release the official stats for. But if you look at the best-selling games for the month that it came out, which is May in 2017, it didn't even break the top 20.
I bought that really late. I remember missing it as well. Yeah,
I got it on a Steam sale.
I don't remember anyone hyping it.
Well, that's the thing, right? So like, that's kind of one of my issues with talking about them as a publisher, is that they don't put hardly any money or effort into their optics, into their marketing. Like, we barely knew Rage 2 was out, and we work in this industry until it was like launch day, and it was like,
Rage 2's here.
Like, we didn't get any emails about it. We didn't get access to it. It's fine for the access thing-ish. But like, we didn't hear about it at all. And it was just like, by the way, the new Bethesda published game's out.
But then there's this whole thing of like, it doesn't have to be the game that you're sending people. Like, we're not sitting here being entitled saying you've got to send this game to review. But like, the marketing could be from a completely different angle and get hype up and build it a different way. Like, get people talking about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's like, as soon as Rage 2 came out, you're seeing it everywhere now. Like,
really?
I'm seeing it everywhere.
Okay. Yeah, Twitter's like self-contained people.
Yeah, that might be algorithmic.
Probably algorithmic. Mm. But like, I'm seeing more of it. And it's like, this is what you should have done leading up to the game release.
Absolutely.
This is what every other company does. Like, you can't have this sense of you can't like think of yourself so highly,
like entitlement kind of thing.
That you're just going to release a game and everyone's going to go, oh, and just swarm to it.
There would have been a day when that was the case.
Exactly. Yeah. Even like something like Elder Scrolls 6, they can't just say, okay, here it is, surprise, it's out of nowhere, and everyone's going to go, oh god, it's here. Like, I know you would. It's same with me in like Doom Eternal, hopefully later this year, please.
At least we know Doom Eternal's coming.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, but they can't just attempt to stealth release everything and just assume, oh, they're Bethesda fans, we've got really dedicated fans, which they do. Mm-hmm. And just assume that they'll buy it.
I think like it's just that they're not Rockstar. Like, Rockstar can hold back entirely and be like, by the way...
That's because Rockstar release a game every 5 years.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, Bethesda sort of stagger their new releases. Like, we've only really had Fallout and, like, Fallout 76 and whatever this gen. They're very few and far between, but it doesn't result in sales necessarily. Mm. But yeah, there's some more statistics for the stuff that they've published. Like, Wolfenstein 2 did 1.4 million in total, which is what the original game did just on PC. So, like, that didn't do very well. Evil Within 2...
That's weird, because Wolfenstein The New Order was brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of people were behind that game.
That's my thing. Like, we're talking about the idea of, like, you know, flirting with the idea of entitlement in terms of access to review copies. My issue is that it doesn't pay off the hard work put into the games in the first place. If you're signing on with Bethesda to have them be the publisher, they're this big, heavyweight, powerhouse publisher, you should reap the rewards of that partnership from day one, and it doesn't feel like you do. Wolfenstein 2 did the whole thing with the 1.4 million. Evil Within 2 only made number 13 in October 2017 in the best-selling games from the NPD figures. And then Rage 2, the most recent example, has only sold a quarter of the original. So,
and that's ridiculous, because Rage 1 just no one seems to care about.
And it's
like a quarter of that is that's
not good.
Really quite sad, actually.
Is this maybe symptomatic of something else happening with Bethesda, though? That maybe they can't have the money and the push to bring these things out as they used to, because everyone's going, oh, wait, actually, they aren't as good as they used to be. So they're just kind of dishing them out.
That would be my
waiting for people to jump on
them. It's like, why would you then just play up to that as a publisher? I think if people don't see us to what we are anymore, oh, okay, then never mind. Well, then maybe we don't have to do it.
But
you should still be pushing stuff rather than just like succumb to people saying, oh, I don't like you anymore.
And that tends to be the thing, because like, whenever we see them, like the last time we see like Todd Howard at E3 and he says a few things.
The only real public thing Bethesda does is QuakeCon on E3.
Yeah, and so it's either Todd Howard or Pete Hines. It tends to be either the two sort of faces of the company. Mm. And like you said, like they, for the most part, I think they just stay away from everything, and then they just rely on the fact that where Bethesda, it'll work. Mm. And as these statistics show, it just
as they literally say, as thinking back to E3 2015 for Fallout 4, when they're showing off the settlement building, and Todd Howard says the immortal words, it just works.
Like,
that's the approach they have for everything.
I mean, even that's become like a meme, that idea of, oh, it just works, is tied to one of the most consistently broken game engines in gaming history.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And so, yeah, I mean, like, even when they showed up at E3 2017, I've just got a quick little note that their conference was very short. It was only on for about 35 minutes.
Oh, it was rubbish, that.
Yeah, and it was like,
I woke up at like 5:30 in the morning to watch that. What a waste of time.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't know, look, when you kind of roll these things together, it's like, do they really know like where they are right now? Like, they sort of kind of have a bit of a publisher wing, but they don't do very much marketing, so they're not really, they're not like dependable like someone like Devolver is right now.
Oh, yeah.
People are excited about a new Devolver game, even in the indie sphere. At least they have like, you know, passionate fans, and they're picking the right sort of games to highlight and run through with them, kind of thing. But yeah, I guess I can pivot into the stuff that they've developed this generation, as opposed to the stuff that they've footed the bill for. What stands out for you guys in terms of a Bethesda game this gen? I'll run down what they've done.
Yes, please.
What do you think?
In what sense? Positive, negative?
Positive, I guess, because it's like, if you were going to say what's the best Bethesda game this generation,
I would say before that 4, because I know you could say Skyrim Special Edition.
That's all I'm going to say, isn't it?
You can't say Special Edition.
It's
a re-release on a new console for a native this gen game. It's Fallout 4.
Right, okay. Ash, yours would be Skyrim.
Yeah, I'm sticking it.
That proves the point, though.
When you look at Fallout versus Elder Scrolls, literally we've only had Fallout. Like, 4 is the only Fallout game this gen that anyone's really
unless you want Fallout
about.
Shelter, but yes.
I mean, Fallout Shelter's been popular, but it's not, you don't really look, it's a mobile game, isn't it?
Yeah, so okay, so we'll run these things down. So in 2015, we had Fallout 4 and Fallout Shelter, so we can split them up. Fallout Shelter was one of the first times, if not the first time, that they heavily went into the mobile market and microtransactions and all that
type
of stuff.
But they did it in such a way that they were like, hey, yes, there are microtransactions, but we've made it so they're not going to be a
Shelter's
thing.
Fine, yeah.
And they I mean, I tried it so many times, but I just don't play games on mobile.
That was kind of my thing. I thought it was fine.
I think as a game in itself, but also morally, I think they went the right way with Fallout Shelter, and people still do play it. It is still really popular. Hence why when they turned around at E3 last year and said Fallout Shelter's coming to the Switch, and everyone just went mental.
Yeah,
it's like, okay, there's still a really good like fan base behind. But yeah, Fallout 4 was where it was at.
Mm-hmm. Did you try Fallout Shelter?
I did not try Fallout Shelter. I did not try Fallout Shelter. I've tried Fallout 4 more than once, like many times.
Work for you?
I think it's fine.
Come down in the well, all right? There's a lot of room.
I think it's fine. It's just, it doesn't appeal to me in the slightest. I can't even stick what it is. Just going into that world, I feel no connection to it or what is going on like, at all. I just don't enjoy it. And I'm not sure if that's something. That's obviously not Bethesda's problem, because it's mine.
Right.
Because they've had many other great games, or Fallout has had many other great games in its series. But Fallout 4, I don't know, and hearing everyone else talk about it being a bit more of a disappointment when they play the rest of the series and stuff, just, I guess I approached it very much as, everything is brown and green.
Yeah, a little bit. They try to do some like colorization stuff with like the general sort of set design and environments, but
the dialogue as well, the wheel
system,
upset me. I was like, I don't believe my woman that I made. I've seen her talk. I was like, who are you? I didn't make you. You know, like,
hit the sarcasm button.
Yeah, literally, I was just sarcasticking the whole time, and I was like,
Yeah. So Fallout 4, I mean, yeah, I don't know, even to this day, it's quite divisive. It obviously has its fans, but you have those people who just kind of go, it didn't blow me away like 3 and New Vegas did.
I think that's the thing with Fallout. I've had this argument with Ewan before. Like, it's like, if you've loved 3 and New Vegas, then 4 will seem a disappointment to you.
But yes.
That's when it's like, I mean, this is a potential conversation for another time. Like, when... Do you need to play the old games to play 4? It's like Elder Scrolls and Fallout. They're the kind of games where it doesn't matter where you jump into them, really. You can jump into them whenever. Mm-hmm. And it's like the comparison of 4 to 3 in New Vegas. Like, people who've played them will go, oh, Fallout 4's not very good. Mm-hmm. Somebody like me who played a bit of them and just never really got into them but got really into 4, I love it. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's just very open to interpretation. But I think in a non-comparative sense, which sometimes is probably the best way to look at a game like this, one that you don't need to play the previous games to understand, I think Fallout 4 is a good game.
Oh, you're way better off if you haven't played the other ones.
Absolutely.
Like, providing you like the sort of like the world building or the general setup or whatever. But yeah, like, I can totally see the like stuff like the dialogue wheel, like the weird, like just the weird sort of sense of story.
I mean, as playing that through, I can understand that, like, sometimes I'd press a button, like when you're in a really heated situation. There's one point in one of the DLCs or just one of the missions when I found another vault, and it was like, you're in a situation, I have my charisma and my speech up, I'm like, right, I can just like sweet talk these people. Yeah. And I pressed a button, and it was like, the prompt was like, you're saying something along these lines. I was like, okay, that's exactly what I want to say. And I pressed it, and he said something absolutely not what I wanted to say, and I got shot.
Everyone disliked that.
That ruined Far Harbor for me, which is like the best DLC for Fallout 4, because I said one thing wrong because the button was implying something else, and everything, the whole DLC story just stopped.
Right.
Yep. And failed.
And you not, shot not with
your
and leg.
And you're still not defending it here.
Not the approach.
Interesting.
No, not defending the speech wheel.
We definitely do.
Elder Scrolls fan.
I know. I was just saying, all right, Colonial Marines.
I think it's one of those things with me and you specifically. Like, I think if we're sitting and playing the opposite game that we like, we're thinking, I'd rather be playing the other one.
Yeah.
That's
why
I'm like, I need to play. I've got Skyrim. I actually got it in the last Steam sale.
Good.
To play. And I'm playing, and I need to put more time into it, but I think there's always a part of me in the back of my mind thinking, I'll be walking around going, I kind of wish I was playing Fallout.
Mm. Yeah, that's me. That's
and
me.
And that'll be you with playing 100%. Fallout. I wish I was playing Skyrim.
I've tried all the Fallouts. We've done this pod and this conversation.
We will do a separate pod for Scrolls versus Fallout.
500 times. We have done it, haven't we?
Have we?
Yeah, you did an Elder Scrolls versus
Fallout.
We've
done a lot of episodes at this point, so it's probably somewhere in the archives. But yeah, so that was back in 2015. And then in 2016, they kind of started doing the Skyrim Special Edition and Skyrim VR, which apparently, I never actually played Skyrim VR, but I saw the fallout from it. It just didn't handle very well. The fallout, lol. And so, like, all the menus, they kind of float in front of you. Some of them are off to the side. The head tracking wasn't very good. You had to sort of crank your face to check your inventory.
It's just one of those games where just plopping VR into it, like, on a conceptual level, it sounds wicked to be walking around. Same with, like, Fallout 4 VR, Skyrim VR, Doom VR, just going around and doing it in person, actually shooting things and casting spells and all this sort of thing yourself. But, yeah, in practice, it just... Yeah,
but then again, it speaks really to that nature of Bethesda just being like, well, the engine's fine, it'll run, it'll be fine, it just works. And it's like, nope, it really doesn't.
It's like, if you get a solid 25 FPS and you can just about do things, that counts as working in Bethesda's book.
Do they have anything other than Fallout and Elder Scrolls stuff, or are they just relying on those names?
Bethesda Game Studios specifically just do Fallout, Elder Scrolls, and then obviously Starfield whenever that's coming
out. And it's like, that's good, that's really good, but you can't just keep churning out mobile games, VR games, tie-in games that aren't mainline things because you're relying on the brand.
Well, they can, and that's what they've been doing.
I know, but I don't like it.
No, me neither.
I think just very quickly looking at the future from Starfield into Elder Scrolls 6 onwards, I think they're probably going to go back to just going, okay, here we go. Elder Scrolls game, Fallout game, Starfield game.
Probably.
Like, let's forget about the half-step ones. Let's forget about 76. Let's forget about the special edition, the VR versions, Elder Scrolls Blades,
that's
all this
what
sort of
we
thing.
Want.
Please just focus on the games that you want, because like they're openly saying, "Oh, you fans have all been going on about Elder Scrolls 6. Oh, you know, we're finally doing it." It's like, well, you should have just been doing it anyway.
Literally, no one. Fallout 4 VR was in 2017 as well, which I didn't hear a single soul talk about, but it did come out.
Josh played it.
No, and he's our only VR man. Our one and only VR man.
I think also because they resold these games at full price.
Right,
as well. Doom VFR isn't even Doom.
No,
it's a different game.
That's the way you move in that, is you point and teleport. Who's playing Doom like a teleport game?
It's Portal.
Just playing like Google Earth. Just like, what the hell is that? And that takes us into 2018, which is Fallout 76, which is an absolute tire fire of a thing. In terms of the, I mean, even on a PR sort of, you know, like public relations side.
Oh, yeah.
the Power Armor Edition, the whole thing with the bag.
Oh, God.
And like, just, I mean, a lot of people know this thing at this point.
Would you like
but,
a carrier bag?
Yeah, would you like a carrier bag or a bin bag as opposed to the one that you paid the highlighted price for? It's just ridiculous. And then the feedback from that was someone got in touch with their sort of like helpline and said, like, this obviously isn't the thing that I paid for. And the response that they got was, we're not planning on doing anything about it. Obviously from an individual, not representative this of wasn't Bethesda.
This was a PR firm, not Bethesda themselves.
But still blew up. It still went in their face. And then they eventually responded and said, look, if you guys get in touch with your payment details and your name, we'll send you a proper bag. And then that was a massive glitch because all those payment details went to one person. So one person then went online and said, look, I'm not a mass criminal, but I do have all your details. Yeah. Apologies. Bethesda then weathered the storm of that and eventually supplied the bags after a 3-month wait.
Well, one guy's just sitting there with all of the addresses going, let me tell Reddit.
Well, he was, I guess, like, if it fell in the hands of someone who wasn't a nice, noble soul, then it would have been pretty bad. So there was all that. And then when they eventually, they started making the proper bags and they then gave all the players a whole bunch of gold in-game. Mm. Turned out it wasn't even enough gold in-game to buy a bag in the game. So they messed even that up.
Whole atoms.
Yeah. And so even that is on top of the fact that the base game is quite glitchy and buggy and it doesn't seem very well put together. I know both of you guys have played quite
it's
a bit of it.
Big banter though, is it?
Yeah.
Like a big banter Bethesda actually should be their name.
Bethesda. Yeah. It's just ridiculous. Bethesda. So yeah, and then like that was the whole thing with Fallout 76 in terms of, you know, something that could have rewritten the ship after the,
do you know,
the,
honestly,
the shaky Fallout 4.
I keep saying this because I put must have been a good 20, 25, 30 hours into Fallout 76. Mm-hmm. I think on a conceptual level, like when it was a rumor the idea of getting Fallout Online, I remember we're doing new stuff like 2 years ago about Fallout Online being a thing, and that idea, like, how cool does that sound? Like, honestly, you're looking at it, thinking about Fallout 76, but like the idea, like the idea of doing Fallout Online, playing like basically Fallout 4 with your friends, like I just thought that's such a great idea.
Ooh.
And I think
for me it's like it's an isolated.
I thought the opposite.
I think that was a really cool idea, and I think honestly, I know that after everything, Fallout 76 is a complete failure. Mm. I can't defend that at all.
You found some good stuff in it, though.
But do you know what? I genuinely think Bethesda went into this, and I think they do this with other... I mean, I know that the special edition was a complete mess upon their end, but I don't ever look at Bethesda and think they're just doing this because they can easily shill it out and get it. I genuinely think they really want to make this stuff right and make it well. Because there was a little spark of 76 that I think really could have been really, really good. Mm-hmm. But they gave it too little time in the oven.
I actually agree with you there. I actually do. Because the one saving grace of Fallout 76 is its conception. Like the whole West Virginia stuff with the urban... Yeah, see, no, it is good. With the urban legends and everything, I thought was a fantastic idea.
It shows that they really put the effort in. Yeah. I think they just rushed it out. If they had said we were getting 76 at the end of this year, had another year in development, I'd have been okay with that. Mm. It's like, I can't speak for Elder Scrolls people, but it's like, if you had a game that was going to be right and they were going to take more time to do it, just take the Valve approach back when they used to make games, delaying Portal 2 to make sure it was right and it ends up being one of the best games ever made.
Yeah.
It's like, why don't you take that approach?
I know.
No, I do agree. I think that there is saving graces in Fallout 76 that makes you see that there is heart behind the company.
Yeah.
But the sheer amount of mobile games and like Elder Scrolls, Blades, Fallout, Shelter,
these half-step things to hopefully keep people
and the fact there's a load of money grabbing
The fact that they have the storefront in 76, which that functions totally fine as opposed to the actual base gameplay is still spotty as hell.
Yeah.
And it's just like things like that. I mean, obviously it's worth separating. There is obviously worth separating the hard work of the coders and the developers and the creatives and the potential, you know, the financial side of it.
It'd be really interesting to speak to the developers of 76 and see what, like, how they feel about this game. They would have slaved over, because the game has got a lot of heart in it. Like the amount of reused assets from Fallout 4 doesn't seem as prevalent as I thought it would be. Yes, it is a bit more barren, but they did make this whole new world, and like genuinely, I think it's honestly a shame more than anything. Like, yes, it was a disaster. Yes, people got very angry at Bethesda, but I think overall people should look at it and go, this is just kind of sad.
That's like, this making me sad, you saying, well, talk about
that's
it.
That's kind of
the... Because like I said, I was really excited. Like, as soon as they said, like, everyone was going really, really annoyed when they revealed it was going to be a multiplayer game, and I was really excited. Like, this is this is the best thing ever. So, yeah, being a fan of it and it not working out is just a shame, but I just, from putting the time into it and seeing what was made and what could have been... Mm. I think Bethesda Game Studios, which then they passed it off to a company they'd bought that have turned into Bethesda Game Studios somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, I genuinely think they went in with this, like, with the right idea. And I think with their mainline games, not the mobile stuff that is a bit more cash grabby, yes, I think they're going with the right heart, but they just don't give it enough. They have the approach of, we're Bethesda, we can do what we like.
That sort of general sentiment of so much potential and that just like overarching, like, oh, it's just, oh, come on, it's just a little
just
bit
just give
sad.
It a bit more room.
That's kind of the general sort of sentiment I had for this general podcast, because I want to love Bethesda more, and obviously I kind of do in general. And it's worth just rounding off the games that they've developed with Elder Scrolls Blades, which is released this year, which I was in on the early access thing. That I didn't hate it. It just made me want to play Skyrim. It's just, it is, but that is
you
very.
Did, didn't you?
I did. I ended up getting Skyrim on the Switch. But it's just, like Scrolls Blades is very much the watered down version of Scrolls. Everything is based on timers. You're trying to rebuild townships, but you can't do so much every day unless you want to pay the money to sort of speed it up. All your gear and everything is, it's all like loot boxy, and you're rerunning
it's
a lot of dungeons.
Where, like, they make these games, I think, because they know that in the East that is a huge market they can very easily tap into, and it does work. Hence why you find games that release on mobiles, like big AAA titles we know release on mobile over there, and then eventually maybe come over this way. Like there's a whole Call of Duty based in China. You can't play here
because they
made it just for that market, and that's what they should have done. They should have passed it off to someone and go, here's a mobile game. Oh, we've released it over here as well, but don't worry, we're not taking our time making it. We've just given it to somebody else.
Yeah, I think it's
released it over there where we actually make money, whereas here nobody cares about it.
Yeah, I think it kind of ties into that overall sort of perception we have, like, of them, of just sort of not necessarily dedicating their time to the right sort of projects when we know that they have Starfield and Elder Scrolls coming up. And then something like Scrolls Blades just kind of taps into the corporate side of it, the sort of money grubby side that was maybe prioritized overall with something like Fallout 76. But that's pretty much where I wanted to end it. I guess some closing thoughts. What do you guys see them doing for the rest of the gen? Is this generation a wash, and do we just look to the next generation?
I think
go on.
I think that they're kind of done this generation.
Me too.
But they're going to come back with a bang next one, because I feel like everyone has been very vocal about what they want. We have just torn them a new one. Obviously going to change
with
their
love.
Minds. Yeah, no, I do love Bethesda so much. And
same.
The stuff that they've given the games industry and how they work, and that they've got this passionate, like, people behind them, I think is fantastic. And I want to see them tap into that again and bring something new and shiny and thought out and... Especially with Starfield, when they've seeded it for so long and seeded all their ideas about it. People have fan theories about
it. And we know nothing.
Exactly. It's got so much potential. And yes, it's a little disappointing to hear that it's on the creation engine, but this is their opportunity to...
This could be, like I said, as I said earlier, this could be a creation engine that they have changed so much because of this feedback and gone, this is basically a new engine.
I hope so. I mean, Starfield is their first new IP since The Elder Scrolls, because they obtained Fallout from Blackout.
25 years.
So it's like, I mean, hopefully they do take some time, take a step back and do something way more revolutionary with it.
I think going into E3 especially, because I am still excited for Bethesda's E3 conference. I think it's mainly because I want a release date for Doom Eternal.
Yes.
But which isn't even then. Well, it is then, but it's here. But I think if they turned around at E3 and they said, right, here are our games, we're going to have people on stage talking about the in-depth stuff. We're not going to have another E3 2017. Thank you for reminding me about how bad that presentation was. I'm Pete Hines. Here's some trailers. Bye.
See you later.
If we don't have that again, and if they don't spend 10 minutes talking about, here's an update for Fallout Shelter, or here's an update for Elder Scrolls Blades, stuff nobody cares about, or at least... Like,
not really. Not the people watching E3 anyway.
Like, if they just said, right, these are our next big games. Here's maybe, like, this is what your first look at Starfield is, or this is conceptually what Starfield could be.
They've said they're not doing anything about the two biggies, Elder Scrolls 6 or Starfield.
They did say that before they then showed off Elder Scrolls 6, though. So.
Yeah, but no, no.
Maybe it's one of those things where, like, I don't know how much they've got to show, because, like, we've got Wolfenstein Youngblood, which comes out basically just as E3 happens, or just about E3. If they spend too much time talking about that, it's like this game's just about to come out. There's no point in wasting your stage time talking about it.
And assumedly something like Starfield, like you said, they don't have anything to show at this point.
Well, yeah, if I remember rightly, they've said that they aren't going to talk about it and that we need to wait and that sort of thing, which I have big respect, because
I mean, again, if it gives it more time in the oven, then that's fine by me. But it's like, going into E3, what else are they going to talk about?
They jump
they're going to turn around and go, oh, by the way, here's this. Like, here's completely out of the blue.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that, like, Rockstar, Naughty Dog, CD Projekt Red, like, they don't do conferences at E3. I mean, obviously, Bethesda have moved way more into the publishing wing.
Yeah.
But, like, if you want to sort of... They can focus on their third-party stuff, but it's like, at some point, just take a step back, let everybody want a new Bethesda game again, and then you come in with Elder Scrolls 6 or Starfield, and maybe that's the way that you do it.
I just want to see them focus on the games that we care about, like how they ended their conference last year by revealing Starfield, by saying we're working on the Elder Scrolls 6, doing stuff... like that. Not necessarily like plugging stuff really, really early, which then just gets people kind of annoyed.
Yeah.
But just being more refined with what they're doing, telling people about their games, like what they're working on behind the scenes, how passionate they are about what they do, because they really, really are.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
And it's just like, I think they're just looking at other big publishers and going, oh, you know, we can rub shoulders with them. We can have the same approach, and then realizing, oh no, this isn't working.
Yeah.
This is coming back to bite us. So I'm cautiously optimistic about E3 because there's a part of me, I have no idea what they're going to show us.
Mm. I mean, considering,
like, unless they've got like two games and that's it.
Yeah, considering the time that they have to fill. We'll have to wait and see. We'll know more in just like two and a bit weeks.
Two-ish weeks.
Yeah. So yeah, let us know what you think down in the comments below of Bethesda's general sort of trajectory across this generation and what you want to see next time. For now though, I've been Scott from the What Culture Gaming podcast, and that's the wrong way around. You've been Rich. I'm going to tell you now. You've been Rich Hudson.
Oh, thank you.
And you've been Ash Millman.
Oh.
We'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.